Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year, and happy the entire East Coast is completely frozen week.
Yeah, I saw a map like 2 days ago, and I'm in the only part of the country that isn't in under 30 degree temperatures right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, this is like maybe honestly like the coldest extended streak I can remember. Including, like, at Syracuse. And even Syracuse, like, a lot of these days would be in, like, the 30s, and you just did a lot of snow. But, like, it wouldn't be so frigid every day. And it sounds like we're going to bounce back a little bit next week, but this weekend's supposed to be, like, in the negatives in New York City, which is crazy. So, not the best. I can deal with, like, 30-degree or, like, mid-20s weather. Once you get into the teens, it's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, for me, once you get into the 50s, I'm over it. But... We don't have, you know, cool names for storm formations like bomb cyclone and bombogenesis.
So necessary.
I said earlier today, there's going to be so many mixtapes named that in like 6 months.
I look forward to them. It's going to be coming out in June, so they'll make a lot of sense.
Yeah, you know, it'll be like the most dated. Somebody's going to have like, it's going to be like trapogenesis, and it's just going to be... 18 tracks of like hollowed out boom bat
featuring two of the Migos, but not all three.
Not all three, because one was frozen in ice.
because Atlanta's like also 30 degrees right now.
Too true. All right, on to less positive or funny things. Syracuse basketball lost tonight, and Dan, it was not pleasant.
No, it was not. It was one of those annoying games where it seemed like it was back and forth the whole time. It seemed like Syracuse had a foothold maybe two-thirds of the way through the game, maybe a little later, when they took, like a 4 or 5 point lead. Mm-hmm. And then Wake hit, like, I feel like they had three straight, like, steals/threes. Brian Crawford, I think, made, like, three threes in a row, which was really annoying. Just a really frustrating game against a team that is not very good. Losing a road game in the ACC is not, like, the end of the world. Obviously, we just picked up a nice home win a couple days ago against Virginia Tech, which should be a tournament team, so that was good. But you would have liked to have followed up with a nice road win, even if it is against like a down Wake Forest team. Not that Wake's like, you know, the worst team ever, but it's the type of game you want to get if you're Syracuse when you don't have a lot of games to give away here.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, like, we'd never lost a Wake before. That was a constant source of jokes, and I actually had some fun content planned around that for tomorrow, and now I don't. Bummer there, but obviously the bigger part of this is the loss and the fact that like a lot of the things that Wake did are replicable for a lot of teams that Syracuse faces. Wake is far from the most talented team that SU is going to face in the ACC schedule. They're far from the most talented team that they could face anything after the ACC if we ended up in the NCAA tournament. I mean, Wake's fine. It's just... they were able to out-rebound Syracuse, which was just a kind of stunning development given kind of, you know, what SU has been able to do to everybody all year. And I'm
considering that Wake's, like, not big.
No, they're Wake not big is, at all.
Wake has, like, 2 6'7", 2 6'8" guys and then 1 7-footer who came off the bench and, no, more play 24 minutes. So, yeah, they have a 7-footer in the middle, which, you know, as do we. And they have two guys that are about the size of our, like, every forward. So it just... And they didn't play that much. Like, Mitchell played 11 minutes and made some nice plays on the stretch. And then Thompson had a pretty good game, and he played 29. But that's, like, their entire front court. Everyone else a guard. So you would have – this. If you had told me what the rebounding margin would have been coming in, I would have said probably SC by 8 at least. So that wasn't great.
Yeah, definitely discouraging and not exactly what we need to see here. I think another just – I mean, you look at the bigger issue, I think, was not just rebounds, it was offensive rebounds, and we really let them get a lot of second chances, I think especially, you know, in the first half. Other issue that I think is going to continue to plague us, even though we ended up hitting almost 40% of our threes, is just shot selection. Some of those late threes, especially the transition possession that we had, where we could have, believe it was take the lead at that time. And instead of taking the lead on that transition, we ended up, you know, shooting an ill-advised three with no help underneath. That turned into a quick transition possession for Wake that I believe was a three on their end. I didn't, like, take any notes, so I'm just going from, like, what I remember in the last few minutes. But a lot of questionable decisions. You know, Frank Howard hit that big three. late, but then the possession before that was the turnover, the intentional foul call on O'Shea Brissett that basically kind of solidified the game in the Deacons' favor. Just miserable all around. This again, this is something that, SU could fall victim to much better teams. The road woes kind of continue to struggle. I know I put that up on the site today for listeners yesterday, talking about how bad we've been on the road these past 4 years. It seems like, unfortunately, that might continue this season, given, you know, what we have left and the fact that right now we might be looking at like a 3-7, 4-6 ceiling away from the carry. Well, not away from the carry dome for true road games, which is not good considering that might include zero upsets.
It's really not ideal based on, you know, the non-conference didn't really give SU a lot to hang its hat on. I think there were some decent, like, I think the baseline level of win wasn't bad because I think we played some pretty good mid-majors, but you want to get that marquee win, and when your marquee win is either Georgetown or UConn, neither of which, you know, I mean, you probably wouldn't even put either one in the tournament at this point, unless Georgetown really did some work on the Big East. It's not great. You know, your best wins end up being, like, what, Toledo or Buffalo, and you know, they were narrow wins at that. So, yeah, you definitely want to pick up at least a couple, like, big ACC road wins. And based on this, obviously Syracuse is almost always better at the Dome, but, you know, this wasn't a great sign considering that apparently it was a very, like, you know, half and half, if not, like, even, I think a lot of people said it was more Syracuse fans there than Wake fans, which, you know, you would hope that would be a situation against one of the worst teams in the ACC, definitely in that bottom tier that we talked about last week, if not, like, maybe one slight tier up, that we're going to face on the road this year.
Yeah, and, you know, I said I broke it down in the article today, kind of looking at, you know, who we still face on the road. We still face Georgia Tech, we still face Pitt, we still face Boston College, so two of those teams are probably worse than Wake. One of those teams, though, Boston College, you know, might end up being a fringe tournament team. Who really knows? Like, this was one of the easiest tests we had left overall, not just on the road. We do face the Deacons again at the Dome this season, too. But the thing is, like, we didn't shoot so poorly that a win was out of the question. I mean, 42%. We didn't shoot so poorly from three or from the free throw line that a win was out of the question. It was just, we lost the rebounding margin, which should make little sense. We turned the ball over 13 times, which, again, is going to hurt. And Tyus Battle got into foul trouble. And, you know, those few things kind of coupled together, you know, really created a head-scratching game. Obviously, some of those turnovers came at ill-advised times. Like, Frank, while he did score 23 points, he did hit 5 of 7 threes. He also did turn the ball over 6 times. So, like, that's not great. Battle had an off game. Only shot 25% from the floor, 1 of 7 from three, you know, 5 turnovers, 13 points. Like, you can't have a game like that from him. It just seemed like everything that could have gone wrong did, for the most part, for the Orange, and you really didn't get the best game from any player, save maybe O'Shea Brissett, who I think we're just kind of used to at this point, you know, scoring at least 13 or 14 and picking up at least 7 boards.
Yeah, and even Brissett, like, he's, you know, your second or third option every night. Even he is, like, not so hyper-efficient that you, I mean, he does so much of his work at the free-throw line that it's, you know, you have to depend on getting foul calls, which isn't great, and he's been getting the line, but you saw him miss a couple big ones. His only 2 misses were, I think, right in the same set of free throws, and they were pretty back-breaking because it was down the stretch. But he's, like, you know, 16 points on 16 shots. Like, there are worse teams, but none of our three big guys are very efficient players. Howard, you know, was more so tonight with 23 on 14 shots, but he also had 6 turnovers, like you said, and he has the tendency to have these very high turnover games. Battle, same thing. Obviously, he, you know, is way better than this most nights, but you have your three lead players aren't super efficient, and I don't think it's all their fault. I think it's the fact that there's no one else with any semblance of a reliable offensive game. Obviously, we've seen some okay outings for Chukwu and Moyer, but they're, you know, players who are very dependent on getting the ball in the right spot. They're not creating it all for themselves. Dolezai is the same way. Washington obviously isn't ready yet. Sidibe, you know, who knows how much we end up seeing from him down the stretch. I assume we'll see more because now he can't redshirt, but since he played tonight.
Yeah, I didn't really see the point in playing him 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that just, it has to mean that he's feeling okay and he's going to play, which is fine. If he's going to play every night, then I have no problem with it. It's just, you know, it was a little
3 minutes in a game where like everybody was in foul trouble is just a weird, especially when Dolezal only played 9 minutes.
And it was in the first half, right? I think. I'm pretty sure it was all in the first half. So, yeah, a weird game. Hopefully, you know, this was just a blip. But we, like you said, we really can't get by only doing our work at the Terrier Dome. We've seen that in the last couple of years when we've missed the tournament. Those teams have gotten big Terrier Dome wins, and it hasn't meant a lot. So you're going to need to see a much better outing going forward. What's our? I know we have we're two of the next three on the road, so we're at UVA and at Florida State after we have the Notre Dame to home game.
Yeah, and Florida State just upset UNC.
Yeah, and I don't know how good UNC is, but like I think these are all like very quality teams. UVA's obviously given us problems in the past. Florida State, we generally play pretty well against, but they're better this year. I mean, they're a better team on paper than us by a decent amount. So I almost feel like we almost need to win one of those two. Not to like start doing that thing, but that's, you know, one of those two road wins would make me feel a lot better. And then obviously you can't slip up at Pitt and at Georgia Tech later in the year.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Now I feel like with this game, and a couple people said in the comments, you know, beforehand, like this creates a zero margin for error kind of situation where, you know, now you can't drop one of those Georgia Tech or Pitt games. And ideally you really need to win the Boston College game now, and you don't really have another option there. I mean, yeah, I would be great to win the Florida State game or the Virginia game, but I'm more banking on, you know, maybe catching, you know, Louisville or Miami. That's really it. Like, there's just not a lot of opportunities left. And like you said, you know, we've seen in recent years, like last year, SU went 2-8, you know, in true road games. Those two wins were
NC State. I was just looking at the same thing.
Yeah, NC State and Clemson were the wins, and they were both like bad games that we just happened to pull out at the end.
Yeah, one was in overtime, which the NC State game was the crazy John Dillon game, right?
Yeah.
And then one was we beat Clemson by one. Neither of those teams was very good. NC State was bad. Clemson was mediocre. And then we were bolstered last year by the fact that we beat Duke, we beat Virginia, we beat Florida State, all ranked teams at home. I don't know that we can bank on doing something like that this year. I just don't know that we have the firepower. So we'll see. I mean, it's way early to just like give up on the year. We could, you know, bounce back and, you know, win an ugly one at Virginia in a couple of days, but definitely not the most encouraging thing. I think if we were out to a 2-0 start in the ACC, I think we'd feel, I mean, obviously we'd feel a lot better about things, especially because the Virginia Tech win was really nice. And we looked like the solidly better team for pretty much the entire game. So it's a little disheartening to follow that up with such a lackluster performance.
Yeah, lackluster, really flat on both sides, especially the field of defensive end. We really didn't do much to stop Wake until about the last 5 minutes of the first half, and it was nice to get that run going to kind of take back the lead. But then obviously, you know, that wasn't able to parlay into some strong play in the last few minutes. I'd say those last 5 minutes were among the most puzzling, perplexing, just mind-numbing things that I've watched from Syracuse since I would stretch as far back as, you know, when things were really, when we'd already taken the postseason ban and stuff was just like coming apart back in 14-15 probably. And that's, I mean, it's been a while. Like, no, SU hasn't been perfect in that time since, but to see that many decisions is kind of, you know, again, boggle the mind. In such a short stretch, not the best. And again, that shot selection, this team is acting like they're a 3-point shooting team, and they very much aren't. So when the shots aren't falling, you know, things go horribly wrong horribly quickly. And that's what we saw tonight, when, again, you know, just jacking up threes. And I mean, even those late threes, like, you didn't expect them to go in, but I'm sure Boeheim's not telling them to just, you know, shoot threes at will. But when you have, when you're trying to close the gap and you're chucking up 35 footers when you're like barely a jump shooter at all, it's not exactly an encouraging sign for me. When, like, especially when you have 10 feet between like you and the 3-point line and there's no defender anywhere near you, like, to me, it shows that there's just this, there's almost like an irrational belief in inability to hit jumpers. And that's not like a character criticism. It's just more of a something I noticed that could potentially preview things to come.
Yeah, it's an issue because I think this team isn't super creative offensively, and like we said, there are only three guys that can create at all. Like, you don't have a fourth or fifth guy that can come in and like have a surprising 10-point game by creating his own shot. So there just isn't a lot of options in terms of like, you know, the three guys who are going to be handling the ball almost the entire time, and it's hard to really spread the floor effectively there. I don't love watching it at all, and I don't think it's good for the team, but I also like understand why we see them settle for three-pointers that they shouldn't be taking, because they're just this it's a flawed team. It's a flawed team, especially offensively. It should get better in the next couple of years when we have guys like Jalen Carey and Darius Bazley who are you know, can inside out players, and obviously Carey gives us another guard that we deeply need. But right now the roster is not made up. I mean, just for a number of reasons that we've done over a million times in terms of the penalties and you know, losing a couple of recruiting battles. Shout out to Jordan Tucker.
Yeah,
didn't really think that one through, and I hate criticizing players for making their decisions, but you know, when you get an offer and then 10 days later commit when you were clearly like plan C, you should probably think about that one a little bit more. So it's just, you know, it's a flawed team, and you're going to end up seeing more of this year, just because I don't really know what the solution is. Playing Howard Washington more, I don't think we've seen anything that makes you, you know, really think that's going to be the answer.
I mean, the only thing from him might be ball movement, but at the same time, like, we don't really need another guy who might not be a factor on offense, especially when Frank is probably our second best offensive player. From the floor, at least. I mean, like you said, Brissett's going to do most of his damage from the free throw line. I think Frank has suddenly evolved into our second best shooter on a night-to-night basis. So yeah, you're not going to pull Frank for Washington, and that's how Washington ends up riding the pine most games, you know, if he gets in maybe a couple minutes. I haven't looked at the advanced numbers on this team yet, well, at least not much this year, but the ball movement thing is definitely troubling in my mind. You know, 9 assists in this game, not great. I think in general you're just seeing Syracuse play a lot of isolation when they don't really have isolation players, save maybe Battle. There's just not enough, like you said, it's a lot of independent basketball. There's just not enough movement, there's not enough creativity. You know, maybe a point guard like Jalen Carey helps that, maybe Howard Washington in year two helps that, but what we have out there right now, there just isn't much. There isn't much left in the imagination once SU has the ball in the half court. You know, whoever has the ball is probably going to drive straight to the basket or settle for a three, and there's very little, you know, other options for them, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, that's why, like, I think it's very easy to say, like, why don't they do this and that? Like, who do you want touching the ball more? Like, right. You have three guys who are handling the ball. I mean, I wish I had, like, numbers on, like legit possession numbers. If you told me that Brissett, Howard, and Battle had the ball less than like 93% of the time, I'd be absolutely shocked. So I mean, there's only so much you can do in terms of ball movement and interesting plays and whatnot. Because like Moyer is a non-factor offensively unless he's getting dunks on dribble drives from Howard and Battle, and you know that's fun when it happens, but you know you put a die there and it can stop most of the time. Same thing with Chukwu.
I mean, Moyer's got one play. It's emphatic dunk.
It's flying from the wing, emphatic dunk off either a miss or a really nice, crafty pass from one of the guards. And then Chukwu, you know, I don't think we expect much more from him than, you know, stand and dunk. Now, if Sidibe gets back to, like, 100%, I think he showed some more offensive life in terms of, like, actually doing something with his back to the basket than Chukwu. So maybe we'll see that. And I do think that the fact that he played tonight, even if it was only 3 minutes, means, like, they think he's going to play, you know, re-expand his role down the stretch. I hope so. Otherwise, this was a waste. But I choose to trust the staff with this. But, yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to overcome. So hopefully we can grind out some wins, because otherwise it's going to be kind of a long season, which we knew was a possibility. And hopefully we at least grow a bit, if that's the case, because it's a super young team. And I do think next year is a much better constructed team. Unfortunately, that's not a lot of solace when you have all of January, February, March to go here.
Right, and especially coming off a season where we just missed the tournament. Obviously, like even the season before, yes, we made the Final Four, but the struggles leading to that Final Four were well documented. The season before that was the postseason ban. Obviously, there's just a lot. There are a lot of headaches for SU fans, and you know, it's you don't want to complain too much, because you know we've obviously had some some nice breaks in there, but at the same time, we've obviously had plenty of not so nice breaks, and it is definitely frustrating to see this. Kind of given the fact that, like, once we saw what this team was capable of, I think that the, you know, for about a half or so, they were able to hang with Kansas. I think that their ability to come back against teams like Georgetown, who again questionable how good they are, even a team like Eastern Michigan, like the ability to come back consistently, in Bonnies, Buffalo, whatever. You know, it mimics some previous teams that were incredibly frustrating, but it also showed that this young group was able to kind of persevere. And then to see them kind of, you know, take a clear step back tonight, persevere, and then suddenly, like, the whole bottom fell out. Definitely not what I was expecting, and definitely not something that I'm convinced is a one-off at this point.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's easy to be discouraged after a loss. I mean, literally, like, the game ended probably, I mean, less than an hour before we started recording this podcast, so it's pretty fresh. But yeah, it's not ideal. I would have loved to see like either last year's team with O'Shea Brissett or this year's team with Tyler Lydon or Andrew White. I think we'd be I think we would have been a lot happier both times.
I would have to agree. on that note, why don't we go to halftime a little bit, because I want to distract myself from seeing Georgia Tech test Miami, which is troubling.
Yeah, that's the problem. We talked about it a little bit last week. Even the teams that we outlined as, like, the bottom tier teams in the ACC, they're not, like, that bad.
Except
for Pitt. Pitt's bad.
Pitt, you're trash.
Pitt should legitimately consider paying players. Like, they would be so much better off.
They should have,
like,
just folded the program this year. Like, just that, take a year, like, off.
I thought about this last night when the Stallings thing happened. Would you rather be a Pitt fan right now, or would you rather be a Louisville fan right now, even considering how much hell Louisville might end up going through? Because at least you had the 2013 title, and at least you donned it. Like, you've had these, and we've talked about this a little bit as a Syracuse fan, like, we've had, like, some fun times. Would you rather be a Pitt fan right now, knowing, like, at least we did it the right way? What, losing your coach to TCU, and having him have one of his best teams, and then never having any tournament success, and being absolute trash for a couple of years? Yeah, no. give me the super shady Rick Pitino years. I'm totally, I don't love that. I wish, like, Syracuse hadn't gone through a very minor version of that, but I'll take it over what Pitt's having right now.
Well, I would personally take what happened to us, but with the championships. As I've stated numerous times, I think don't cheat unless you're going to win. And you can debate the word cheat in Syracuse's case and all of that. But I think, I said when we held out Fab Mello and all that, like, should have just played him. You asked for forgiveness later. Obviously didn't affect North Carolina. If you ask any USC fan, they won those championships. Reggie Bush, yep, won that Heisman. Like, nobody cares about the NCAA record books. You're not gonna remove the title that you get to watch and all that. So to me, I don't condone rule breaking and all that. But if you're going to rule break, do it to the utmost and make sure that you get the win out of it, as Louisville did.
Yeah, and also, it's not like Kevin Stallings is some saint. Like, he's never been caught cheating or anything. The dude's a raging asshole. Like, what, Vanderbilt, he told his best player, Wade Baldwin, who was, the 14th overall pick in the NBA draft that year, that he was going to, like, kill him? Like, come on.
Yeah, he won't have a job much longer, and that's...
No, he's toast. Pitt is new AD. He's toast. He's, like, very, very toast.
Which we kind of predicted when he was hired.
Yeah, that's also a really gratifying thing in college sports, is when a hire is made and you immediately say it's really, really bad and it turns out to be just as bad as you said. Even like Stallings, like, it doesn't seem a very pleasant person. Herm Edwards seems like a perfectly pleasant person. That's going to be a terrible hire, and I'm going to feel like, oh, I knew something about sports for now for this time when that doesn't work out. I don't know why that's a thing I really enjoy, but predictability, flushing it, working out in those ways, but when you say, like, I don't know what this athletic director was doing with this hire, and ended up being completely right, like, I really enjoy that. And and that seems to be the road that we're going down with Pitt and Kevin Stallings, because I don't know one person who liked that hire when it happens.
But, like, do we want Pitt to be good?
I'm fine with them being bad.
I don't really care if they're good at all.
It just seems like we know the road we're going down here, so you might as well say, like, well, we told you.
Like, but at this point, I think it's done in even, like, a few years. Like, the last probably 2 years of Jamie Dixon and then, like, these few years have done such irreparable harm to, like, Pitt as a basketball brand.
That's the problem, is, like, Syracuse has a title to fall back on and has a lot of NBA players, even when you don't have a ton of great ones. Like, at least there's some, you know, there's what, 10 guys playing in the league right now. It has history. Pitt doesn't have any of that. Pitt had the Pete and Jamie Dixon being team being pretty good all the time. And when you take away Jamie Dixon's teams being and Ben Howland's teams being good, pretty much every year. And then the Pete has kind of turned into like not much of a home court advantage, as best as I can tell this year. Like, what do you have? Because Pitt doesn't have a history to fall back on that we, and you know, as we've gleefully pointed out a lot.
Oh, Pitt.
I guess Pittsburgh's a cool city from what I've heard. I haven't spent that much time there, but like, they don't recruit super well ever. They have a, they were a system program for a while. It worked out in terms of like regular season success, and there's not, that's not, I mean, no, that's not something to scoff at. I wish, you know, our teams the last couple of years would have been like the Pitt teams in the 90s and the, or not the 90s, the mid to late 2000s. But I'm not, you know, going to write home about the tournament success they didn't have and then now look at what they're doing. It's like, okay, well, none of this was worth it, really.
I would have to agree. On that note, this will we'll pour some out for our Pitt fan listeners, the one or two that might be there. A little beer talk.
Cool. So over the weekend, well, actually last Friday, which seems like so long ago, because I had no sleep this weekend, and you can tell now that I have a cold because it's 8 degrees out and I haven't slept. I went to Philadelphia. We went to not the actual Conshohocken Brewery in Conshohocken. We went to a cool like outpost they have in Phoenixville, where they have a bunch of cool like games and stuff, and pretty much I think their whole arsenal on tap. Had their Type A, which is like one of their signatures. Had they're all about the Benjamins, which was another IPA, really good, unfiltered. They do a lot of like West Coast type stuff, and then a Doll's Eye, which was a black IPA, I believe, which was really interesting because there was like some hoppiness, which you don't usually get with a dark beer, but still like it was good. I don't love dark beers, but in terms of like a you know, kind of an interesting style. I've had some pretty interesting black IPAs, and this is a solid one.
I'm surprised I didn't call that beer the Mark Emmert.
Then what else did I have? Oh, I had some other, I think, fairly local Philly things. I had the Pub Santa from Local Hero Brewing. I'm not sure where that is. Or Liquid Hero. Liquid Hero Brewing is in York, Pennsylvania. Okay, so it was fairly local, which was a Belgian strong, really delicious, really nice, like amber color, but like surprisingly drinkable. It was definitely like pretty boozy at 8.4%, but like for you know that alcoholic beer, and you know that stronger beer, it went down pretty easy, which was nice. And then we stopped by Fishtown Brew Pub in Philadelphia, proper in Fishtown. Had their De Peach Mode, mostly because of the pun, but also because I like peach sours, and this was a very good one. And then their Greener Than Green, which I believe was a double IPA. Oh, no, it was a regular pale ale, which was pretty good from what I remember. And then I think that was it.
Nice. Pretty nice selection there.
Yeah, did pretty more variety than I often get. Tried a little bit of everything.
Very, very nice. For me, had a few things. Had Victory at Sea, which probably a lot of people see from Ballast Point. They had their High West Barrel Aged version, so High West Whiskey out in Utah, which is a very, very good distillery. They're both owned by Constellation Brands, so this was a nice collab. Very interesting beer. Me and my buddy split some for his 30th birthday last week. Had an Easy Jack from Firestone, had a San Diego Pale Ale 394 from AleSmith. The brewery started canning their Humulus Lager, which is kind of like their first foray into hoppy-ish beers, back before they made Offshoot Brewing Company their you know IPA-focused label. But I was really glad that I grabbed a four-pack of that, so I had some on New Year's Eve, and then had some more during the Rose Bowl and the ill-fated Sugar Bowl that I wish I hadn't bothered watching. Also had a bottle of Frucht Peach from Brewery Tarot. It's their Berliner Weiss and just the peach variety. And then had a, from Brewery Tarot and Garage Project, had a Ngongo. It was a Saison It was lemon balm, chamomile, and honey. So, interesting beer. Just standard Saison. It was light, refreshing. I was all about it.
Very good.
And on that note, I don't know. Syracuse's upcoming games. Dan, they face Notre Dame. Bonzi Colson's out. I feel bad about that because he's honestly a lot of fun to watch. I got to see him live at the ACC tournament last year. Nonetheless, that might help us bounce back from this loss pretty quickly.
Yeah, I actually am like relatively bullish on Syracuse's chances in this game. Notre Dame has not looked very good recently, and they definitely won't look better without their best player. Now, Notre Dame occasionally has one of those teams where they shoot like crazy, and that's always staring against the zone. We've also, and these two teams have like a weird history where they tend to knock each other off at weird times. It's in the dome, which really helps. I think Syracuse will definitely should have a rebounding edge, considering Colson is such a dominant rebounder. I think he's the only guy on their team that averages more than like 6.5. Martinez Gebben is their second leading rebounder. And he's not like a huge factor for them. He's like their fifth guy in the rotation here. Senior 6'10 forward, but he's only playing 21 minutes a game, so I'm not sure what the rotation's really gonna look like now. So we should be in good shape on the glass. They do hit almost 40% of their threes as a team, and Colson's not a huge part of that. Farrell, obviously we know pretty well, is dangerous. TJ Gibbs shoots about 47%. Josh Mooney off the bench is probably our guy who could go for like 15, even though he averages 3. If I had to guess, he's a sophomore shooting 47%, but he doesn't play that much. This would be a very nice one. Partially because I think that this could be a game where we win it, and then Colson comes back, and Notre Dame looks really good at the end of the year, and everyone's like, oh, but Syracuse beat Notre Dame, and then we all forget that like Syracuse beat Notre Dame without their best player.
That's fine.
So, yeah,
we did that a couple years ago, and it worked out pretty well.
Yes, I'm now looking at John Mooney. He's definitely going to go off. Like, I have no doubts. We already called this once this year. We were 100% correct. John Mooney for Notre Dame.
The Jack Ferguson Memorial.
Yeah. So he averages 10.6 minutes. He averages 3.5 points, shooting 47% from three. He shot. He hit half his threes last year, even though he only played about 4 minutes a game. His career high, I'm looking at his game log, his career high is 9, which he's had a couple times. It is LSU and Chicago State this year. I'll check last year. I don't think he had 9 points last year in the game. No, he barely played. John Mooney's going to go for 17 points.
17. How many three-pointer attempts does he have? See, that's tough. I feel like with only 17 attempts.
Yeah, but it makes so much sense.
No, it does. See, I'd almost bank on TJ Gibbs. Like, without Colson, quote-unquote, hogging the ball, I feel like Gibbs is just going to start chucking.
I just wonder if Gibbs is like too big a player.
Right. No, yeah. I mean, the out of nowhere pick always has to be like, you know, a random bench guy. Usually like a scrawny 6'4" white kid, but occasionally it's a star.
Yeah. I mean, it could be Gibbs. Gibbs could totally have a big game. The thing is, like, he has big games every so often. So. Right. It wouldn't surprise me. He had 26 against in that LSU game. He had 21 against Delaware last month. He is 18 against Southeastern Louisiana. He had 21 to open the year at DePaul. DePaul's still not back, if you were wondering. So he's not super consistent, but you know, he's thrown at least 7 every game. He could easily go off. Notre Dame without Colson could end up just being like a total spread the floor and chuck because you don't have your big guy in the middle. So I feel decent about this. Hopefully we pick this up because I think it would be a nice win even without Colson. I don't think that's a thing that like people are going to bring up all the time just because people forget when these injuries happen. Now, the problem is that Notre Dame might lose Colson. He might be out for the rest of the year. So that would be bad because then they might just go in the tank completely. But either way, you want to win the game. There's no downside to winning it, no matter who's playing. So hopefully they can go out and get another Virginia Tech-esque effort at home.
Yeah, that'd be nice, especially because Virginia Tech is looking like crap tonight against UVA.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, you know, who looks good against UVA besides Malachi Richardson?
No one except Malachi, except for the fact that UVA is actually scoring points.
Like, I mean, they're just a really good team.
I know.
And it's remarkable because every year I'm like, all right, now they lost these two guys, so now are they really going to bounce back? And nope, Tony Bennett's really good. He's a really good coach.
Well, at least Kyle Guy got rid of the man bun. There's less to hate.
He's a lot more likable without the man bun. That's 100% accurate. It's like there's nothing to really grab. I mean, like literally and figuratively, there's nothing to grab onto in terms of like he's just a good player.
Sadly true. All right, Dan. Is there anything else you want to talk about this basketball team? Because I almost feel like I've reached my limit on this hoops team, if only because this game was so goddamn frustrating.
No, this would be a much different podcast if we did it like last night, or you know, New Year's Day for some reason. Even though we wouldn't have done that just with the football games.
Yeah.
No, I'm good. I think 37 minutes of it. I don't know that our fans want to hear much more on a Thursday after a loss. Hopefully next week's will be more happy. Who do we have? Do we have two games before then, or just one?
Several. I mean, we still talk football, and as everyone would expect, we would be talking football around here.
Yeah, I mean, football stuff has happened.
Well, and even if it wasn't, we'd just talk about Tulane or something.
they did go undefeated in 1998, so they should hang a banner.
I think I missed that team by a year. I saw them in 1997 against Army up in West Point, actually.
What is your take on the UCF thing? I feel like I know, but
I mean, I'm such a big fan.
it's ridiculous. Like, it's totally ridiculous. It is such a wonderful troll move. I don't know how you can't appreciate that, because they're not just doing a little bit; they're going all the way.
Well, there's actually like it's valid, and like that's the thing. Like, the validity is what makes it great.
Based on college football history, based on like the vast majority of college football history, it's valid. Like the most of college football, in terms of like going back to the like Rutgers, Princeton days, was teams just taking titles that they didn't actually really earn. So now we have a slightly better way of deciding this. But like UCF wasn't given a shot, so like what do you want them to do? They were not given a chance. They did everything you could have asked, aside from like realize 5 years ago that they were going to hire Scott Frost and he was going to be a nasty coach, and then schedule like Auburn in the regular season and beat them. Like,
they scheduled Georgia Tech and Maryland this year.
Yeah, and what one of those games got canceled and they mm-hmm. blew out Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like they were really good. Hopefully, we at some point get like a 6 or 8 team and you could sneak a group of 5 in there every so often. Like, it's not like, cause here's the thing, like, I don't necessarily think we absolutely need an auto-bid group of 5. I would like it if it was 8 teams, but with 6, I can get where you wouldn't want that.
Yeah, I don't think we need that. I think, to be honest,
like, West Michigan last year would have gotten stopped if they played one of the 6 best teams.
I just think that if you have an undefeated team, and that, an undefeated team that's played a Power 5 opponent, and you have, and nobody else is undefeated, and you have a question about the fourth spot, I'm not necessarily opposed to just getting rid of all the controversy about Ohio State. And because, like, as much as UCF doesn't bring that national brand audience and all, aren't you probably more intrigued by Clemson UCF than you are by Clemson Alabama 3 if you're not a Clemson or an Alabama fan?
Yeah, the problem is, like, with this 4-team field that we got this year, I think it was very hard to argue that UCF was better than one of those 4. But like with that Michigan State team a couple years ago, if this UCF team was the other option, like,
yeah,
I think I'd probably go UCF there. Even Washington last year was really good. I think they probably get the nod. But the problem is, like, based on how the committee treated them all year by not putting them any higher than, what, 12th, made it seem like there's no chance of one of these teams ever getting in.
Well, they knew nothing about them. Like, that was the problem, that they literally knew nothing about the team.
And they just shuffled the deck chairs around them. And, like, Scott Frost after the game complained, and he was, like, 100% right. There was no indication from the committee that there was ever any interest in putting UCF in a spot where they could, you know, like you said, if like a crazy week happened and like 4 through 8 lost and UCF was just there and, you know, beating the hell out of people, like there was no chance of that happening because they kept them far enough away. They kept like punches distance. So you just had these teams winning and losing and just circling UCF, who I think it took them like almost the entire year to get from like past like 15. So it was just ridiculous how they were treated. I don't know if they should have been in the top 4 this year, but they should have at least had like more of a say than what they ended up getting, which, you know, and they beat Auburn. You know, Auburn was a really good team who beat the 2 national finalists, so I don't know what you want from them.
Well, and like, so yeah. Did you see Jason Kirk's article about it? And he was talking about like what the committee was saying, because I hadn't even seen this. Like what the committee,
I did not.
What the committee had said afterward, like they were talking about it, I think like with like a week or two left, and they were like, oh yeah, well, like, you know, they weren't balanced enough. They said like,
oh,
they,
who cares?
Yeah, right. Like they said their offense was like great, but like the defense, like what
you put in Alabama?
Well, you put in Oklahoma, who who allowed like what, like 55 points to Oklahoma State that game.
Yeah, you like what, the most balanced team is Georgia, and I mean even Clemson like has a nice offense, but Alabama obviously exposed them a bit. Alabama's not a balanced team at all. Oklahoma is completely unbalanced, and there was no chance that they would have been left out.
That's
they
the thing.
Didn't deserve to be left
out.
So who cares?
They're all completely full of shit, and like, and that's I mean, that's why it's perfectly college football in many ways to have this committee, because it once again it actually takes a step back from the BCS in that it debases things in zero numbers. It allows for, you know, a very subjective group of people to kind of, you know, sit in a back room unchecked and just make decisions for the sport. And like for the most part, it's fine because you have like, they do seem like they're dedicated to resetting the rankings every week. They're not necessarily suffering from recency bias that the rest of us do, you know, purposefully or not purposefully, but what they've done to really create a kind of, like I did feel that there was always the chance that the BCS was going to be able to reward, you know, whether it was Cincinnati or Boise State or TCU or Utah, was always going to be able to get somebody close enough, even if they weren't going to give them a shot at the championship, they were going to give them a shot to finish in the top three or four. And that did happen numerous times.
Yeah, I think we had Boise State finish in the top five once or twice. I think we had TCU finish like third once.
TCU finished second once.
Yeah, after the bowls, right?
Yeah, after the bowls.
They obviously didn't finish.
Utah did it too before they were in the Pac-12.
Yeah, like I think the biggest problem with the BCS was that you only had two teams. Like right. It was very limiting in a sport where there are often three or four.
Well, and you could game the formula a little bit.
That too. I think I would think like if you just took the BCS computers and just added two teams and made the playoff field that way, it might be the best solution out of, you know, or a good combination of the two. But as long as we're going to have this, I think the playoff itself is way better than just the two, obviously. Just add two more teams, and then we're good. Like, no, people are acting like this is a slippery slope thing. There's a big difference between the fifth and the seventh best team. Like, right. And there are years, I mean, this year we saw, like, there was a legit case to be made for Ohio State. Like, Ohio State, if they made this playoff, like, I would be a little surprised if they won the whole thing, but I wouldn't be, like, astronomically shocked.
I think they would have smoked Clemson.
You think?
Yeah, because I think that Clemson's offense showed in our game that they just didn't have it, like just did not. And in most games this year, just the offense just didn't have it.
Against a team with that kind of talent, I mean, obviously ours team isn't one of them, but I mean, Alabama just had so much more talent than Clemson, and Clemson has a lot more talent than like 99% of the teams in the country. So
exactly,
and that was Alabama not at full strength because they haven't been at full strength all year.
Yeah, I would have taken Ohio State to win it all, unless they were facing Oklahoma again.
That's a problem. It's like, especially now, like this year was a weird one where there was no like set, like there was no far and away best team. I thought any of the four could have won it. I liked Oklahoma because I just thought their offense was at a different level, but and their defense had looked better up into the lead up to this game. But then we saw, you know, I don't know how much better the defense actually was, since Georgia literally did whatever it wanted every time it ran the ball. So, yeah, I mean, I'm still looking forward to the last matchup. I think there's been a lot of, like, dourness about the two SEC teams. I'm probably going to be rooting for Georgia. And
I'm rooting for Georgia. It sucks because, like,
they're a much more fun team.
They're like, a much more fun team. More fun. It sucks that both teams are defensively focused. It sucks that Kirby Smart used to work for Nick Saban. It sucks that it's all SEC, and we remember what happened last time, and that's obviously haunting everybody's kind of, you know, images of what this could be. But I mean, I personally think that the committee messed up the rankings because, as we saw, like they really wrote a huge kind of pass for Clemson for losing us. And I think that Alabama game exposed at least some of the things that we exposed, that they were far from perfect and that there was just not really enough firepower in that offense this year. And sure, Kelly Bryant was hurt for our game, but like if you're really that good, you should be able – like. Then your, you know, defense full of four and five stars and your second or third four and five star quarterback should be able to come in and pick up that slack against a team like Syracuse that, you know, your fans made no maybe had no problem, you know, saying sucked after the fact. Like, so to me, like, Clemson should have been probably number two, maybe even number three. I really think that like Georgia earned their way to number one. And you probably weren't going to put Georgia Alabama in that 1-4 game just because from an aesthetic standpoint, it then made like it then kind of relegated the SEC title game to something that was non-existent. But then in that case, put Oklahoma Alabama in one game and probably put Georgia and Clemson in the other.
They were never going to move Clemson to 4, though. So
I don't think they put Clemson to 4 in that case. I think in that case they give Oklahoma the benefit. They put Oklahoma to 1, even though Georgia was probably number 1. And you give Oklahoma the 1 spot, put them against Alabama, and then on the other side you put Clemson, Georgia.
See, I would have been fine with Georgia, Alabama in the semifinal piece. A, it wouldn't be any worse than what we had from Alabama, Clemson. It might at worst have been like the same game. But then you have no chance of an SEC final. And then the possible matchups, Oklahoma-Alabama would have been a really fun clash of styles. Oklahoma, what were the other one? Oklahoma-Georgia, we saw, which was an amazing game. And then it would have been, you could have had Georgia-Clemson, which is a rivalry game. Obviously not one that we play all the time, but still like a very two very close programs. And then what's the last option we would have had? Alabama-Clemson, which would have been part 3, which wasn't a great game, but I think there would have been plenty of hype for it. So, yeah, I would have been fine with that. But I get your argument as well. But I don't really care that much that they're two from the same conference. I that doesn't really do much for me. It doesn't affect me really. But the fact that they are two, like, I think they're slightly different variations of a very similar. And Clemson was the same thing. Like, they were all like kind of similar teams. Georgia's quarterback's a little different than the other two. Just more of a traditional pocket passer. All running oriented, all defensive focused. But I have a lot of fun watching Sony Michel run, and I have a lot of fun watching Nick Chubb run. So I'm still gonna really look forward to the Monday's game, and then I'll take a nice break from college football for a bit.
Yeah, especially now that we don't have like the heat of like a big recruiting season to kind of weigh down the rest of January.
Yeah, it is kind of nice having like a resurgent like news cycle. I'm interested to see how that affects. But college basketball is still around, obviously, in February, even though it doesn't really heat up until March for most people.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'll see how I feel about that when we get just, like, college basketball is way harder to get people super interested in on a national level than college football is, even recruiting. But overall, like, I think a nice couple weeks from it will be good. But I think Monday night will be fun. And Georgia, at least, Georgia's not a team that's won any time recently. Their last title was in 1980. So this is like, while they've been around for a while and they've been a good team for a long time, Mark Richt was really consistent there. It would be nice to have another new champion.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically just the same as Clemson.
Yeah, it's almost exactly like what Clemson was 82 before last year.
That was 81.
Or it was 81, so it was literally the year after. So and obviously Georgia has a ton of momentum. So it would be nice to break up the kind of monotony we've had recently where, until Clemson, we had the same couple champions, like, repeating a lot.
Bama, LSU, USC, Texas.
Yep, Oklahoma hasn't won in a while, but they won still pretty recently.
In our lifetimes, that we can remember.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was the same, like, 5 or 6 teams that have taken home everything. So, yeah, I'll be pretty squarely on the dogs for Monday.
Agreed. Quick break here that UVA is up 25 on Va-Tech. That's not going to go well for us. I'm already dreading that game.
Also, the Bonnies are down to Dayton.
And Dolphins. Georgia Tech is beating Miami.
Nah, it doesn't really affect us yet, but it's something.
Scares us down the road. We were going to talk Syracuse football for a sec, and then we decided to go on a 10 to 12 minute tangent about the college football playoff. So I guess before we wrap up, did want to talk a little bit about just next Tuesday. Syracuse gets a 10th full-time staff position that they can use for their football coaching staff. I had mentioned a couple names this morning. I don't know if you saw that, Dan. Just, like, didn't really go in-depth on anyone. Was more just talking about, maybe giving Mike Lynch the full-time OC job and hiring a quarterback coach for one of the roles since we're replacing Sean Lewis. And then with the other, hiring someone who's more like in a recruiting coordinator role that we give some sort of, like, maybe it's running backs coach, maybe it's special teams coordinator, whatever you want to give him, but he's largely a recruiting coordinator. And I just kind of looked at a couple names that we'd probably keep an eye on. And I don't really know how fast Syracuse is going to fill these spots. But would assume they'd want to be on the early end of that, especially with the, like, you know, regular National Signing Day coming up and SU still having a couple scholarships left to give.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell because Babers brought in, like, almost his entire staff when he got here, and the other hires have been kind of one-offs, and it's always hard to project these, like, lower-level assistant jobs when you're not a, you know, SEC power or something where you can go trade defensive coordinators all the time.
Yeah.
I thought some of the names you mentioned were interesting. Ron Whitcomb being an upstate New York guy, which I don't necessarily think is, like, a huge thing, but, you know, it should entice him away from ODU, which is... done some interesting things. We brought them up a lot in this podcast before.
He's been there for a while, too.
Yeah, almost the entire coaching career is there, which is interesting. Kenny Dillingham would be a great get, just because Memphis' quarterback play has been fantastic. I don't think he'll leave Mike Norvell, because he's been with him since Arizona State. So I don't think that's super realistic, but I like the idea of it. Steve Spurrier Jr. is really interesting. I don't know if he's going to be leaving that area, because I think this would be... really branching out for him. He was with his dad for a while. Where was he between South Carolina and Western Kentucky?
Oklahoma?
Okay, yeah. So he doesn't really have the roots up here.
But he doesn't really have the roots in Kentucky either, technically.
Yeah, I mean, it's closer to the Southeast.
Yeah,
then.
And I would think he's got enough ties maybe to the Southeast and Texas that, for a recruiting standpoint, that we might want to take a look.
Plus, you know, we'd have maybe Steve Spurrier around once in a while. I'd be all for that. I think that'd be worth it in and of itself. And you know, WKU's not the worst spot to be at. Mike Sanford, I think, is a pretty bright young coach. So if he learns anything from him, I would be all for that. And obviously, we could probably give him a nice pay raise. I think that when you click on Steve Spurrier Jr. on Google, under his name, it says Jerry Spurrier's son and not like Steve Spurrier's son.
Mm.
shout out to Jerry Spurrier. She really won that one. With just great Google autocorrect or autofill. And then Jim Zembrowski, same similar thing. Obviously, he's at Buffalo now. I don't know how much of the upstate New York ties we really care all that much about, but he's in the area, so you'd think, and he's from the MAC. He's in the MAC, which obviously is where Babers was. So,
and I feel like Buffalo's done something lately, and I mean, their recruiting this cycle is actually pretty good.
Yeah, Buffalo's done a nice job, so... it's hard to really argue against any of these guys, but it's super tough to project where we'll go, especially because Babers did bring like his whole staff with him from like the last two times he's had a new job. So it isn't like there's like a trail of former Babers assistants out there that he could go bring up to the big leagues. So,
well, and all his recent hires have been outside that kind of like any of his previous trees anyway.
Yeah, and that too. So there's not like a lot of like there's not like trends you can look at versus like. Nick Saban loses his defensive coordinator. Obviously, Brian Daboll is kind of a weird hire, but you kind of know like the same kind of guys he looks at.
Right.
Which in the SEC is literally they just rotate defensive coordinators. I'm pretty sure they all rotate a defensive coordinator like through a circle every year. Just now Dave Aranda's at A&M. LSU's defensive coordinator always goes to A&M.
Is he actually going now?
It sounds like he's being enticed. I don't know how much they're going to pay him. He was making like $1.4 million last year.
So, I saw like, LSU was going to potentially raise him to 2 to stay, which is just stupid.
This is getting so nuts. LSU paid both those guys so much money last year. I think they were each making like $1.5 million. Now you're going to raise Aranda and then Canada. Like, who even knows if he's there in a couple days?
We
go hire Matt Canada.
That's what I was thinking. Like,
it'd be so funny if we did that after Schaefer was here.
Well, you and I like weren't really sold on Canada like in his like 1 year of being good at Pitt.
He was really good at Pitt, but he had really good players.
He had really good players, and he was like really good for like 1 year, and all the other years, he was like, all right.
Yeah, NC State, he was like completely NC State. He was okay.
Yeah, and like the fact that Syracuse had a chance to... Yeah, SU had a chance to hire him like 4 years ago, so it's not like... It's not like he was like out of... Like, because he doesn't have this system that like he brings with him. Like other people, like other like, you know, really like bright kind of rising offensive minds do. Like, he doesn't have that resume.
Yeah, actually, I said we could go hire him, but, like, it wouldn't make that much sense just because, like, he is a play caller. Like, we're not going to hire a play caller.
Right. And then and that's why I kept, like, my kind of list. And, like, a lot of people on Twitter or whatever were like, oh, what about this guy? I'm like, well, like, they're an offensive coordinator, so, like...
We don't really need an offensive coordinator. I'd rather get a big recruiter, like, because Babers is calling the plays. And Babers is running his system. Now, he might take input, but... and you know, maybe there's an offensive coordinator from a group of five that will come up to not play call plays because it's a big raise or whatever, but Like, I'm not that concerned about filling the offensive coordinator position with, like, some flashy name, because, like, what's the, you know, it's not going to be a huge difference in terms of what we see on the day-to-day.
No, I'd rather just give the job to Lynch full-time, and then let's hire a QB coach, because I think, you know, the system's going to rise and fall on how well the QB position plays.
Yeah, and then if we can go get, like, another, I know you said running backs, I'd be more interested in, like, a second DB or defensive line-focused guy. And then,
well, we had two of those already.
For D-line. How many guys do we have coaching?
For D-line, we have two already.
Okay. I'd be fine getting another DB guy, and if he can recruit. Obviously, Nick Monroe is, like, our best recruiter. But...
Or have a DB guy that actually is better at DBs, and then have Nick Monroe just be the recruiting guy.
That's fine, too. I can't. That's the thing. Like, our DBs haven't. I mean, they were better last year when they were healthy. Right. A lot better. Like, they were so bad the first year. They were a big step forward last year, even if it fizzled out. But Nick Monroe's main attribute here is his recruiting. We, like, can't really lose him because he's by far our best recruiter. So even if the DBs aren't, like, great, if they're, like, making steady progress, I'm pretty okay.
Yeah, same. I think, to be honest, like, I know some people have mentioned this before, I'd rather spend the money on, like, a QB coach who's, like, really going to hit it out of the park. And then I'd even be fine with, like I mentioned in the article, just, like, promoting somebody like Asiomulba.
Yeah, he seems like a pretty popular guy around the staff and whatnot.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, he's been on staffs before, so it's not as if, like, he's foreign to the coaching profession at all. Like, I'd rather use him in a, like, strictly recruiting, and then, like I said, give him a ceremonial position, whatever, if you need to. And that's, like, not a recruiting-specific role, but, like, that's fine with me, but only if you're going to really spend on a QB coach. And I feel like there's so many former spread QBs who, like, didn't make it in the NFL who are just hanging around right now. Like, I was going to say Graham Harrell, but he just got play calling duties down at Texas, North Texas, I think. But, like, him or anybody like him, like, again, look at, I'd say, former Washington State quarterbacks, former Texas Tech quarterbacks, like, anyone who has thrown a pass under Leach and maybe Briles, if only because I'm not going to hold most of the players accountable for that, probably.
I think it'd be unfair to do that for players who have had no connections to any of that when we were, you know.
And Samson's on the staff already anyway.
Yeah, and Babers is our head coach, right. And he was there for, you know, probably something. Just the timeline gets changed all the time. So, I mean, if there are no previous, I think it's completely unfair to hold, like, a player accountable for what, like, another player on his team did if he had no knowledge of it, which these didn't seem, they seem like, not isolated. Obviously they weren't isolated. Yeah, well, they weren't isolated because it was, like, a string, but, like, it wasn't like this was, like, 40 players in a room. Right. So, I'd be okay with that. Because those guys all end up, like, it seems like a lot of these new young coaches are from, like, that kind of thing where they're, like, former Leach or former Briles quarterbacks.
Actually, now that I mentioned Harrell, like, I should have probably dug a little bit more into him. Because, like, he's somebody who I haven't really watched enough North Texas this year to, like...
They were good. They were really good.
They were a really good passing team. Like, I'd be interested to see, like, how much of their offense aligns with ours. If there's something there, that would be worth, like, bringing him aboard and actually calling plays along with Lynch.
So, yeah, he was at Wazoo as a receivers coach in 14-15 when they were still, like, almost completely passing dominant. Like, they still don't run the ball very much, but, like, that was those Wazoo teams that won, like, seven games and threw the ball a ton and gave up, like, a million points. North Texas threw the ball a lot. I think it'd be an interesting opportunity for him to, A, get to a different area, but also to kind of, obviously we haven't run the ball well yet, but it started to come along, and we know what Baber's ideal offense looks more like. And to get him an experience in that more of a balanced up-tempo spread, ideally, assuming our offensive line and our running backs come along.
And also get us another foothold in Texas recruiting.
That's you.
Well, cool. I feel like now I'm on the Graham Harrell train.
Let's do it. Let's push for it. He's also a former Green Bay Packer, great, so I'm all for it.
Even more reason. I think that'll do it for today. I'm surprised that we got as far as we did with football talk.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, obviously we have the championship, and we had one really good bowl semifinal, and then one kind of mess semifinal. But always plenty to talk about in college football, even if it isn't totally Syracuse specific. But we got some of that in too, which is good.
True indeed. All right, Dan, thanks as always for joining. Much appreciated.
Yes, Always a pleasure. Hopefully more of a pleasure next week.
Yeah, we have two games between now and then. We have Notre Dame this Saturday. On the 9th, we are on the road at Virginia. I was going to be watching that game. Now I'm not because I got Lakers tickets. So, gonna miss it. But that's kind of in keeping with me being a disloyal idiot and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch the Virginia Tech game until last night, so
yeah,
it happens. It was New Year's Eve. What do you want from me?
Exactly. I'm just going to DVR. I'm just going to DVR the game, and then until someone texts me that we lost by 25, and then I'm like, all right, I guess I don't have to watch.
Right. I mean, I watched all of Virginia Tech because I was like, oh, we won by 12, and it was probably better than that based on like following the score. So yeah.
Perfect. All right. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, and go Orange.
Orange.